heard the call to build your small business? Make it happen with a .net domain name, the place for dreamers for 30 years and counting. Visit keepdreamingup.net for tips and advice, whether you're just getting started or looking to grow. That's keepdreamingup.net.
You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome back, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben DuBose. Boy, what a glorious Sunday it is here in Houston, Texas. Apologize for the slight delay in our post-game recap show after the Rockets' 107-91 win over the Mavs on Saturday night, improving the Rockets to 3-0 on the year. A little bit of a delay because, well, I think all of us in Houston late Saturday night had something to celebrate, if you will, after the Astros wrapped up their second World Series appearance in franchise history, getting it done in Game 7 against the Yankees. I was actually down at Minute Maid Fort. Didn't even get to watch the Rockets game in full until this morning. The good news is that, well, DVR'd the Rockets, got to see the game, and, well, this is what you want when you see the Rockets take on a team like the Dallas Mavericks. You want to see a mature team that is able to take care of business, and that's what the Rockets did. And I didn't so much get down on them for not doing that against the Kings, because, as I said, the Kings game two, Rockets won by five, that was a trap game. That was a potential schedule loss, and thankfully it wasn't an actual loss, but on the back end of an opening back-to-back, no time to adjust to not having Chris Paul, a lot of tired legs, and not just a normal back-to-back, a back-to-back in which the game one is a huge game, both physically and emotionally, in terms of the toll taken to go up against and beat a team like the Warriors, that, yeah, there's certainly a little bit of a lag when it comes to playing the very next night on the road. But home against Dallas, the Rockets had 2 days off. It's the home opener against the Dallas Mavericks team that while they'll probably be at least somewhat competitive, the Rockets should be better than. And, well, folks, the Rockets showed it in a big way. Even being outscored by 18 in the fourth quarter, they still won the game. Of course, that's with basically third stringers in there. Still won the game by 16, and we're up by 34 after three quarters, 92-58. So that shows you the level of domination the Rockets had. And perhaps the most amazing part of it is that the Rockets didn't even shoot that well. The Rockets shot only 23% from behind the arc, 11-47, and yet they still had 92 points through three quarters and just cruised to a win. So if the Rockets are not making threes and they're still able to get a big win, that shows you the full capability of this offense. And then a lot of it, too, they do succeed getting plays off of their defense as well. Both P.J. Tucker, Luke Bamute, 27 and 26 minutes between them, 27 and 26 minutes respectively. But yeah, you saw a lot of plays that they made that led to transition points. And really, you look up and down the lineup, the Rockets were very efficient inside the arc, even though the threes weren't falling. For example, Eric Gordon was 1 of 6 from behind the arc. Well, he was 4 of 5 from inside. It had 18 points plus 11. So that's kind of a common theme. Trevor Ariza was 1 of 5 from behind the arc, but he was 2 of 2 from inside it. And Trevor, by the way, even though, you know, 8 points, 3 of 7 seems a little pedestrian, well, the Rockets were a team best plus 34 in Trevor's 31 minutes. So I think that speaks to Trevor's defensive contributions. Of course, he spent some time on Dirk Nowitzki, as he always does in this matchup, and that helped limit Dirk to just 2 points on an ugly 1 of 8 shooting in his 18 minutes. But yeah, Trevor, no matter who he was guarding, he made a positive impact, that plus 34. And then shortly behind him, I've kind of buried the lead, but James Harden, absolutely magnificent again. 29 points, 7 assists on a very efficient 10 of 19 from the field and 6 of 13 from behind the arc. So for those in the preseason worried about James Harden's shooting form, well, folks, there's your latest example. Don't worry about that. 6 of 13 from behind the arc. So really, if you take out Harden, by the way, what's amazing about that, so let's take out Harden's number. If you take out his 6 of 13, the rest of the Rockets were 5 of 34 from behind the arc. That's part of why Harden only had 7 assists in his 31 minutes. He actually could have had a lot more than that if the Rockets had made their usual threes. But even when not hitting from outside, they're still able to get that win. Again, partially because they do have a very talented team. Clint Capella had another double-double, even just in 21 minutes, 13 points, 10 rebounds. The Rockets are able to get easy buckets. Nene only had to play 10 minutes, but he was 6 of 6 in those for 14 points. So the Rockets, yes, they can get easy buckets. They have the guards, Eric Gordon, James Harden, that are able to drive to the rim. But in addition to that, they have a brand of defense, toughness, physicality that they did not have a year ago, and it's because they're able to augment the usual guys like Trevor Ariza with your P.J. Tuckers, with your Luke Bamute, and you're able to, well, get some easy buckets, run out in transition. But then beyond that, it's not just a matter of the Rockets scoring and being efficient offensively, because it wasn't just that they had 92 points through three quarters. They also limited the Mavericks to only 58 of their own. So it's a pretty remarkable defensive performance. The Mavs in the first three quarters, 20 points, 19 points, and 19 points. That is a remarkably consistent level of defensive performance and effort from the Rockets. They made it boring, and, well, that's what you want. As I said leading off, I understand why the Kings game was a little bit close. Also, give the Kings some credit. The Kings have some young talent, and I thought De'Aaron Fox, Buddy Hield, Willie Cauley-Stein, they just had good nights, and sometimes you tip your hat to them, especially their home opener. They're going to be juiced. But when the Rockets are playing at home, they've got time off. You want to see them go in and take care of business, and that's what they did. And it is easier said than done. Even though we say the Rockets are a better team than Dallas, look around the rest of the NBA on Saturday night. Golden State lost by double digits to Memphis, a team that's mediocre at best. Oklahoma City lost to Utah. The Cavaliers were blown out by Orlando. These are really good teams, the Cavs, the Thunder, the Warriors, that all took losses on the same night that the Rockets just methodically took care of business and destroyed the Mavs, destroyed the Mavs so well that some of the fans actually got to leave a little bit early so that they could catch the end of the Astros-Yankees Game 7. So kudos to the Astros for that as well. But above all else, I would just say this was a very workmanlike, mature game from the Rockets, and it's great to see, even without Chris Paul, James Harden, Eric Gordon, Clint Capella, when you have three guys like that in your starting lineups, of course, we all know what you can get from Trevor Ariza and Ryan Anderson. By the way, let's give some credit to Ryan. Even though I didn't mention him from an offensive perspective, he just had 3 points, 1 of 4 from the field, all threes. He did have 10 rebounds in his 23 minutes. Ryan has been, I would say, surprisingly nimble on the glass this year through three games. He's been a lot more, the word I keep coming back to is spry, and that's something he said going into the year, that he knew he wanted to be quicker. So he came into camp, he lost some weight, he was putting a premium on that, and so far it's paying off. You know, it's a small sample size, but in three games, he's averaging 27 minutes a night, but he's averaging 7.7 rebounds per game. That's a pretty substantial jump from a guy last year who actually played more minutes per game than that last year. Last year he was at 29.4, and he had 4.6 rebounds per game. So actually, again, small sample size, it's early, but even though his minutes have tailed off by a couple, somehow his rebounds have jumped by more than 3 per game from 4.6 to 7.7. I don't expect it to stay at 7.7 the whole year, but even if it just increases by a couple, gets that from, you know, 4.5 to 6.5 in his upper 20 minutes, that goes a long way towards making Ryan Anderson more playable on that end of the floor, and give him credit, because I think Ryan has a high level of self-awareness, and I think he knew that getting quicker was the secret. It's interesting. When you hear folks talk about rebounding, there's kind of an old-school philosophy that, well, you just need to get bulkier. But I think for Ryan, and I would agree with this, the issue is that he's not athletic enough to get some of those rebounds in space. That's what we saw last year. So rather than needing to get more physical, rather than needing to put on more muscle, I think what you saw from Ryan this offseason, and credit to him for recognizing this, is realizing that he needed to get more athletic, back to the player he was earlier in his career, before, of course, he had some of the back and neck issues that plagued him in New Orleans. And while he's not going to get all the way back athletically to where he was in his low 20s, back in his Orlando days alongside Dwight Howard, if he can get even a little bit of that form back, then all of a sudden that makes him a much more viable player. And then, of course, you use him alongside P.J. Tucker and Luke Bamute, and all of them are in the mid-20s per night, and you can just mix and match and throw so many different looks at an opponent, and the odds are one of those lineup combinations is ultimately going to click. So, again, he's not even the headliner, but I would say Ryan played well. The depth of contributions were very, very strong. Haven't even mentioned Tarik Black, because Nene only had to play 10 minutes, and this is one. If you can get Nene out at 10 minutes, yeah, you do it, because he's 35 years old. And so it was the first real game that Tarik Black got extended run in, and in his 13 minutes, he was 2 of 2 from the field, had 6 rebounds in his 13 minutes. And so that's big, because you think back to Tarik Black, he's a guy with that sore knee in the preseason who did not get that much run. So if you can get him some regular season action in games that you get the lead, then all of a sudden that's going to make him much, much more ready for stretches where you do have a little bit tougher schedule, more back-to-backs, when inevitably you're going to have to sit Nene, and then you need Tarik to literally be a rotation player. So that's the other benefit, is that if you're able to get these big leads, you get some of these younger guys a chance to play. Now, collectively, they didn't do that well. That's evidenced by, you know, the fourth quarter, the Rockets were outscored 33-15. And I think we all know from 10 through 15 on the roster, the Rockets are not as good as most other teams around the NBA. Now, a lot of it's because, well, in a blowout like this, the Mavs are playing guys that are closer to being regulars than the Rockets are. But beyond that, you have a team in a rotation that's as well entrenched as the Rockets. It's tough to truly fill out that roster the way you would like. We actually saw that with the Jameer Nelson signing. I'm going to touch on that in the back half of the show. We're about to discuss some of the Chris Paul issues and where we think he stands. But in the fourth quarter, that was when you got your run from Tarik Black. You had Demetrius Jackson. He was a little better tonight. 4 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists in his 17 minutes. You had Bobby Brown and Troy Williams get 5 minutes each. Joe Chi got 7. So while the collective performance was not that strong, at the end of the day, what you want are signs of individuals stepping up, because you're not going to need those guys as a unit to function together. At least I hope to hell you're not, because that would require a ton of injuries to the top 9 or 10 in your rotation. But what you want are signs that a couple of those individually are capable of stepping up. And for me, Saturday night in garbage time, Tarik Black, that's a pretty encouraging performance again. Made both of his shots, had 6 rebounds in his 13 minutes, actually had a couple of blocks as well. So even in a fourth quarter when the Rockets played their regulars a little uninspired, the Mavs having something a little more to prove, then yeah, you can still take something positive out of the Tarik Black performance, and that's on top of course, the dominance you had in the first three quarters from your regulars, your starting five with Harden, Gordon, Capella, Ariza, and Ryan, and then your main guys off the bench being PJ Tucker, Lukba, Mute, and Nene. So, don't want to go on too much about this game, because it is what it is. Give the Rockets credit. They were mature. They took care of business against a Dallas team that they're better than. They're now 3-0, which is the most you could hope for after week one of the regular season, excuse me, still in preseason mode a little bit after the past couple of weeks. The only negative that you could point out after this first week, and that's what I'm going to close out this show discussing, is, of course, the absence of Chris Paul. When we last talked on Friday, I mentioned the last couple of shows of last week, the potential for him to miss more time than expected, and then if that were the case, the Rockets needing to kind of look around in the guard market for help. And shortly after we went forward with that show on Friday, we learned first from Mark Stein of the New York Times that he could miss as much as 4 weeks. Now, that was later clarified by Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN that it was more like 2 to 4 weeks. And honestly, it could be sooner than that. In reality, nothing has changed with the injury. It's still a bone bruise. It's still structural. But I think the Rockets are tired of being asked about it every single day. They don't want it to be a distraction, so they're just going to throw out some absolute maximum time frames to kind of buy everyone some time, and without it being a thing, just say, hey, we're going to let him sit out. And as I said, I think that's honestly a positive thing, that they're taking a longer-term view with this as opposed to having it grind through. But in the short term, unless Demetrius Jackson really steps up, and he was a little better on Saturday night than he was Wednesday in Sacramento, so maybe it's a positive trend, but I think you probably do want more of a veteran presence that you could trust anyway with Demetrius. There's also the fact that he's on a two-way contract, which once the Developmental League, the G League now starts up, he'll be limited to 45 days up in Houston. So between that issue, the fact that it's pretty clear that Mike D'Antoni doesn't really trust, for whatever reason, Bobby Brown as a rotation player, the Rockets may need to look elsewhere for help. And the first guy they went after was Jameer Nelson, and they were reportedly interested in him, according to Woj and a few others. He ultimately signed in New Orleans, so I think the Rockets are still looking around at other options. Some of the reports Friday said the Rockets have been in touch with various agents about potentially available point guard clients. It's a longer list than you might think. Isaiah Cannon, former Rocket, he's a good friend of Chris Paul's. He could be an option. Deron Williams is available. There's a lot of, accomplished vets Jordan Crawford's more of a two guard. He was actually let go so that the Pelicans could sign Jameer Nelson. But Crawford's a guy who's he's a shooting guard first, and he is a good shooter. At the same time, he has had more than 5 assists per game in an NBA season before. So you could theoretically see guys like that as an option. Nothing accomplished, but I think you'd like some more steadiness with Chris Paul out. And we first discussed it last week, and the reason that I think the Rockets were probably aware of this as a possibility is that it's not like the bone bruise happened right before the game against Golden State. That's the game that Chris played, had 11 assists and 1 turnover, 8 rebounds, but you could tell he was limping a lot, was not explosive offensively in terms of creating off the dribble because that knee was limiting him. And it's not like it happened 2 days before. It happened 6 days before, almost a week before that final Wednesday of the preseason in Memphis. So if a week was not enough for that bruise to heal itself, then after playing on that bruise for 33 very high leverage minutes against the Warriors, it was incredibly unlikely, always, in my opinion, for it to be as simple as, oh, we're going to rest him a game or, you know, a day or two, and then it clears itself up. No, you're probably looking at about a week at a minimum, and maybe even a couple of weeks, which is what they said. Now, the month, as I understand it, I really don't think the Rockets are necessarily expecting him to miss a month. It's just, that's the absolute worst case, and so you throw it out there. And who knows, maybe there's some competitive advantage. You know, you talk to these agents and you say, oh, it could be a month, because you want to make yourself as attractive as possible to clients and give yourself the best possibility to sign them. Ultimately, I don't think the Rockets are expecting it to last that long. I think that's just probably the maximum. Now, if you want a comparison, Kevin Durant, I think everybody remembers his knee injury in early March last year. That was a bone bruise. Well, it was also a bone bruise and a sprained MCL, but the bone bruise was the most prohibitive. However, because it was the combination of the bone bruise and the MCL, and you could see Durant was on crutches immediately after that injury, he didn't play a month. I don't think Chris Paul's bone bruise is to that extent, because Chris Paul, even though he was limping, he was able to functionally play 33 minutes against the Warriors, actually played pretty well. So while the knee, I do think it's a legitimate injury, I don't think it's just a minor bruise. At the same time, I don't think it's the month-long type bruise that you saw with Durant. I think that's just something the Rockets are throwing out there as, you know, just a guidance, because they don't want to promote panic. I think they just don't want this to be seen as truly day-to-day. They just want to go on with the team they have, and when Chris is ready, they'll just calmly say he's ready and he'll return to the lineup. And that could be, you know, in a few days, or it could be a couple of weeks. You just have to watch how his body heals. I don't think they're actually anticipating him being out for a month. It's just being open and aware of the possibility. But part of the reason they're throwing it out there, I think, as I was saying a minute ago, I think it also gives you a competitive advantage, and they need a competitive advantage to sign someone in November. Because Jameer Nelson would have been an ideal fit. He was a point guard, played major minutes in Denver last year, good shooter, accomplished veteran. He chose to sign in New Orleans. And a lot of folks were confused, saying, oh, the Rockets are a contender. Well, and New Orleans obviously isn't. Well, that's nice, but where that pays off is in February or March. If it's closer to the end of the year, you might see a guy sign up for an uncertain role, and then, you know, even if you don't get that much playing time, then he's happy to be in a contender. In October and November, the entire season is ahead of you. And so these guys want to put themselves in a position to where, A, they can play, and B, they can set up their next contract by hopefully playing well. So I think that's where the Rockets are limited, because best case, if you're trying to sign a point guard like that, you can offer them a steady rotation role. Not a huge role, just a, you know, 12 minutes per game thing, because you still have James Harden and Eric Gordon playing major minutes. But you can offer a steady role for 2 to 4 weeks. And then after that, everybody knows that the Rockets, they have all 48 minutes of the point guard spot spoken for with James Harden and Chris Paul. And then you also have Harden playing a lot of time at the shooting guard. You have Eric Gordon there. So between those three, two definite all-star players, and James Harden and Chris Paul, and Eric Gordon, who, when he's on the way he has been largely through the preseason and first 3 games of regular season, those are three all-star quality players. So it's not easy to sell a guy who has options that Houston is the place for him. And Jameer saw a case for more minutes in New Orleans, and ultimately that's, I think, why he went there. I think at this point in the year, the Rockets are probably not going to get guys that are truly at the top of the list, just because guys that are at the top of the list and have more options are probably going to want to go elsewhere where they have a better case for minutes, and there might be more money too. The Rockets can also only offer the veterans minimum, by the way. But in addition, I don't think it's so much about money as I do about opportunity. And so that's why it's tough. You know, I mentioned Jordan Crawford earlier. He's a combo guard, but can he play some point guard in a pinch? Sure. And then going forward, once Chris Paul comes back, again, it doesn't have to be a backup point guard. It can just be a backup guard. So would the Rockets potentially have interest? Sure, I could be interested in him, but I don't know that the fit's going to be there for someone that accomplished. That's why I think you might see them go a little bit further down the list, someone like Isaiah Cannon, who's simply looking for a contract and a chance to be on an active roster rather than a clear path to minutes for a long time. That's where you have problems with some of these, like Jameer Nelson. Yeah, it would be great. He would fit, but he's looking for more than just a two-week, you know, temporary fill-in spot. He wants a more consistent role long-term so that he, at this point in the year, so that he can set up his next contract, and ultimately, that's where the Rockets are a little limited. So I do expect him to go out and get help, because I think between Demetrius Jackson being young, his 45-day limitation due to the two-way contract, and also the fact that they clearly don't trust Bobby Brown, I do think the Rockets would like a third guard that they can trust to play behind James Harden and Eric Gordon. I think that could happen today, tomorrow. It could happen pretty fast. I think they're looking, but they're ultimately not going to be able to get maybe the true top-of-the-line guys. I'd like to be wrong. I'd love to see a Jordan Crawford type here, but it may be tough for them to sell just because that long-term role is probably not there. And I think that's what kept Jameer Nelson there. And some of these guys who really have options, I don't know that Houston is going to be the most attractive. So I think the Rockets will get someone, certainly. It's a need, and there are enough guys that need a contract. But if you're wondering why the Rockets, despite being a contender, were not able to land Jameer, I think that's why. Now, if it were later in the year, if you're looking at buyouts come February or March, then yeah, all of a sudden a guy like Jameer Nelson, I think, would consider the Rockets then, because at that point, two-thirds of the season or more is already gone. He's already got a track record at that point that he can use in free agency. But this early, I think his agent is in his ear, and most agents are in the ear of most of these players, saying, hey, you need to go in a spot where you can prove that you are still a viable rotation player in the NBA. And I don't know that Houston is that spot, because the team is so good, they're not going to be that many consistent minutes. So yes, I do think with Chris Paul likely to be out, again, it could be anywhere from, I'd say, 10 days to a maximum a month, although I'm personally not expecting a month. But yeah, certainly he's going to be out a little bit, because if it was as simple as just clearing up with a couple of days off, then the 6 days between when the bone bruise happened in Memphis and the Golden State game would have had a greater effect on his mobility. So it's going to take a little bit of time, but ultimately that time is not enough for somebody like Jameer Nelson to fully entrench themselves as far as being a commodity. So I think that's what's going to hold Houston back from the true top of the line guys, that and the fact they can only offer the veteran minimum. But I do think they're looking for it, and they'll get someone, more of a veteran, to fill that spot, and it's going to happen pretty quickly. It just may not be the true top of the line, and it's one of those things. At this point in the year, if you're a team as good as the Rockets, it's pretty difficult. Now, the other side of this, I've heard a lot of folks wanting to know why Jameer wouldn't pick the Rockets, and so hopefully that explains it. The other side of it, I've seen some folks say, well, why didn't the Rockets address this before the Chris Paul injury? Folks, because before the Chris Paul injury, there was no path to minutes at all. Those minutes were all completely spoken for. And then, of course, part of it, too, even if they wanted to, then it goes back into the issues of why the Rockets, even now with Chris Paul injured, still couldn't appeal to Jameer Nelson enough. So imagine trying to appeal to a guy like that before. It's tough to get an accomplished player if there's no path to minutes. But beyond that, why the Rockets weren't actively pursuing, even though they had a roster spot, folks, you have to consider the luxury tax. This is just a refresher, a reminder, because I know it's easy to say, well, Chris Paul's had a few knickknacks here and there. I actually think that's overdone. I don't think Chris Paul is as injury-prone as the label. He's actually had a season of... Let's look real quick. Chris Paul's last three seasons, he has had two of those three in which he has played at least 74 games, and one of them, pulling it up right now... Yeah, the last three seasons, he's played 74 more games twice, and in one of them, he played all 82. And this entire decade, he has never played fewer than 60 games in a season. And he's actually played 70 or more games in three of the past 5 years. So he's had a few knickknacks, but let's not turn him into some major injury concern where it's all of a sudden like Dwight Howard back in 2014, 2015, where he's going to miss half the year. No, there is nothing that suggests that at all. That's a little bit overdone. It's just one of those things because he and the Clippers collectively had some injuries in the playoffs recently, then all of a sudden that sticks out as more fresh in people's minds. No, while Chris Paul's had a few injuries, there's nothing in there that suggests that he's a major injury risk, and as such, it's tough for the Rockets to make an appeal to someone like Jameer Nelson or someone that might have options clearly for that spot. But the other reason why the Rockets did not aggressively fill that spot, the luxury tax and avoiding it this year is a very real consideration for them. Now, they are not all the way at the luxury tax right now. I believe they could sign two guys for about the veterans minimum. I think they're about maybe $3.5 to $4 million away from it. So I think you could sign conceivably two guys at the veteran minimum and before you really go in the tax. And it, true, if you need a little bit of wiggle room, you could try and, you know, attach a small asset like a future second rounder and offload, you know, a short-term contract at Bobby Brown or Troy Williams, someone like that at the deadline. If you really need some help, of course, there are a few things that you could conceivably do. But I don't think the Rockets just want to spend just to spend, because after this season, refresher, the Rockets' payroll is about to skyrocket. If this team does as well as everyone expects it to, and 3-0, they certainly look the part right now, then it is going to take a staggering amount of money to keep this team together. Chris Paul, he's making $25 million this year. I assume he's going to be in line for that five-year, $200 billion extension that he passed up with the Clippers. So that's going to take him to a starting salary of about $35 million. That's going to jump his salary by about $10 million per year. Clint Capella, he's on the last year of his rookie deal. I think Clint Capella is going to be a $15 million a year player on the open market. That's going to jump his salary by more than $10 million per year. So just between Chris Paul and Clint Capella, two of your mainstays, in the case of Chris Paul, one of the best players on the planet, just between those two, you're going to be adding over $20 million in payroll, in my opinion. Then there's a new deal for Trevor Ariza. And then after next season, starting in 2019, that's when you have James Harden's extension kicking in, which raises his salary by about close to $10 million per year. So if you want to keep this team together, you're going to be paying the tax. And I think Tillman Fertitta has said he's willing to do that, new owner, under the right circumstances. Yes, I think he will do that. I buy that he's a good owner. However, even good owners are not necessarily willing to pay the repeater tax. That's not Tillman being cheap. That's reality. Even Golden State. That's why you see Kevin Durant taking the discount that he did, because the repeater tax, to be in the tax consecutive years, and of course it gets steeper each and every year, it is staggering what that can be. So that's why even Kevin Durant isn't making the max. So the Rockets, they would prefer not to be a luxury tax team this year, so that next year is year one for them as a luxury tax team, rather than year two. And then, of course, the following year, year two rather than year three. That's why you don't want to pay the luxury tax just to pay the luxury tax, because it's not just a matter of, you know, just a few extra dollars out of Tillman Fertitta's pocket this year. It's also how it positions you for future years. Now, the Rockets are not going to not pay the tax this year no matter what. If the opportunity is right, for example, the Carmelo Anthony trade, that was the kind of, they felt like if they could upgrade Ryan Anderson to Carmelo, then, and of course that would be about $6 or $7 million extra in payroll, they would pay it and deal with the consequences later, because Carmelo Anthony is that level of player. Whoever you're bringing in as, you know, your fourth guard, now you're kind of backup point guard in the absence of Chris Paul, a Jameer Nelson type, Jordan Crawford, those are not worth paying the luxury tax. So you have to keep that in mind. Now, signing one of these guys by themselves is not going to put you at the tax. But what I'm saying is you have to keep that tax in mind, that you do not want to hit that this year unless it's a true difference maker. For an incremental upgrade, you're potentially putting yourself in a very, very difficult spot the next 2 years once those Chris Paul, Clint Capella new deals come into play. And then, of course, James Harden gets his deal ratcheted up as well. Trevor Ariza, that's another one you can throw out there. So, yeah, you've got to be you've got to be careful if you're the Rockets. And I think they're aware of that. Now, again, signing one of these guys, the counterargument to this is, yeah, all that said, you can sign any of these guys for the minimum and it's not going to push you to the tax. No, it's not. However, any of these signings takes away from your ability to pursue buyout candidates in February and March. So that's why I think the Rockets did not want to give up the money, a roster spot, that kind of stuff. They want to be a player on the buyout market in February, getting close to March 1st, because that's the time that guys like Jameer Nelson would consider the Rockets. As we said, once their season is two-thirds, three-quarters gone, then all of a sudden, yeah, you will have guys that just want a chance to win, to be a contender, because it's the dog days of the NBA calendar. They just want to get to the postseason, and any chance at all is worth it for them. It's not now, but later on, the Rockets, as good as they are, they could be a player for buyouts, and so that's why they're not signing guys ahead of time just thinking, oh, what if Chris Paul gets hurt? No, if Chris Paul gets hurt, which he did, now the Rockets can sign someone, but that's why they didn't do it beforehand, because ideally this wouldn't happen and you'd maintain full flexibility. Now again, if the Rockets, if and when they sign a guard, it's not going to kill their flexibility. They still would have, like I said, room for one more minimum signing, in my opinion, without getting to the tax. And then, conceivably, even if you needed more room, there are ways you could shed a little bit of salary, the Bobby Brown, Troy Williams type guys, if you really, really got in a pinch. So it's not like signing one of these guys by themselves is going to put you in a world of hurt. That's why the Rockets ultimately are willing to do it, even though it's kind of a short-term temporary need. At the same time, it's a really good team, and you want to give them a fighting chance. If you can do that without really diminishing your long-term flexibility, then sure, do it. But you don't just do it for the sake of, oh, yeah, this, we don't have this role now, but maybe if there's an injury, then, yeah, let's insure ourselves. No, the Rockets didn't do it because I think, you know, until it happens, you want to maintain all of that flexibility. That's why they didn't go after this earlier in the offseason, but ultimately the injury happened. It is what it is. The Rockets are trying to adjust, and it's not going to crush their chances of being a player on the buyout market. And, you know, that could be a guard. That could be any number of positions. It's kind of best player available at that point. But that's kind of the logic from the Rockets side, why they didn't pursue anything before, is that you don't want to spend just to spend. The luxury tax is a consideration. You don't want to get all the way to that tax line this year, given what you're going to pay in future years. And, you know, as far as what limited money you have before getting to that luxury tax, you want to be as flexible on the buyout market later this season when you are more appealing, even if you can't offer a direct rotation role, you want to be as flexible as you can. So that's why the Rockets were not going to go out of their way before an injury to Chris Paul to sign someone just for the sake of signing someone. And then the flip side, from the player's perspective, this early in the year, they're not going to sign with the Rockets just because they're a contender. This early in the year, players, they want to roll so that they can prove that they're a good player so that they can get paid. At the end of the day, that's what it's about for all of these guys. Sure, they want to win, but at this early in the year, they want an opportunity to showcase themselves so they can get paid. Now, if somebody comes available later in the season, when most of it's gone, then yeah, you may see a chance to win, spotlight, all that kind of stuff, take on a bigger role. But right now, it's not that the Rockets aren't attractive from a winning standpoint. They are. It's just that that's not really the consideration, the leading consideration for guys in October. So that's why, you know, while Jameer Nelson would have been nice, I think the Rockets probably got to shoot maybe a notch or two below that as far as the tier goes on these backup guards, point guard or otherwise. I do think they'll sign one, but the true top-of-the-line guys, they're aware of how good this Rockets team is. They're watching just like we are. And at this point in the season, that's just a hard sell to make. So hopefully that explains it. If you've got any more questions, please reach out to me on Twitter and we can talk even more. But hopefully that's kind of a primer of what the Rockets' thought process is, why they have not signed the guy before, and the types of guys who they might sign going forward. Again, my guess, I keep coming back to Isaiah Cannon just because of his relationship with Chris Paul and his familiarity with the Rockets organization, having played here under the James Harden regime. Well, I call it the James Harden regime. But yeah, there's just a lot of familiarity there. That's why I keep coming back to him. But I think that's the tier you're probably looking at more so than guys like Jameer Nelson, who truly do have options. That's just my personal opinion. But whenever it happens, of course, we'll react shortly thereafter on Locked On Rockets because, well, that's what we do. We're the podcast covering the Houston Rockets on a daily basis. And so, yep, we'll be back tomorrow when the Rockets are back in action Monday night against the Grizzlies. We'll have post-game coverage then. But we'll talk even before then if there's a signing, because that's what we do, and we're the only daily show covering the Houston Rockets, so we want to be there for you. So yeah, as always, appreciate you guys listening, and if you have questions, please feel free to reach out, because we want to be there for you. We are your daily resource, so lockedonrockets@gmail.com, that's the email address. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better program. And then, of course, on Twitter, Locked On Rockets is the show, at Locked On Rockets is the handle, and then at Ben Dubose, that's me personally. So with all that said, plugs out of the way, I'm going to go and try to take a nap. It has been a crazy few hours. The Astros wrapping up the World Series, or World Series berth, excuse me. Not trying to knock on wood, not trying to jinx anything yet, but I need a nap. I'm sure some of you guys do on Sunday as well, after the big Rockets win Saturday night, and then, of course, the Astros clinching the American League pennant. So, yeah, in the meantime, I'm going to go take my nap. Hopefully, y'all can as well. And then we'll talk again on Monday night when the Rockets take on the Memphis Grizzlies, second home game of the year at Toyota Center. For now, happy Sunday, everybody, and we'll be talking again Monday after that Rockets-Grizzlies game.